Hey y'all, and welcome back to another episode of Skill Set. This week on the podcast, we are talking teeth, and who better to talk to us about these dental conundrums than Dr. Amy Thompson. Amy is AVDC residency trained, and she spends her days doing what she loves best, which is being a dental surgeon. But when she's not working in the mouths of dogs and cats, she's been spending her time on social media helping to train the next generation of veterinarians. And on today's episode, she'll take us through one of the cases that she saw in clinical practice, and we'll go through the storytelling skills that she used in this case and that you can use in your future dental cases with your clients. So with that, I'll say, Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
I know. I'm super, super excited about this because I think this is actually the first dentistry skill set that we've done. And having someone who is so experienced and well-trained as yourself, you've seen so many different types of cases and you are so eloquent when it comes to teaching and kind of conveying this information that I was like, this is who new grads need to hear when it comes to talking about dentistry. And so before we completely launch into this this skill set episode, why don't you just take a couple seconds and just tell us like who you are and kind of what you're doing in the world right now?
Oh, well, you're so kind. I don't feel elegant at all when I talk about dentistry. I think I just won't shut up about it. but thank you. That means a lot. So yeah, so I graduated from the Ontario Veterinary College in 2012. I didn't know what I wanted to do exactly. I was actually a food animal student, so I wanted to do cats, dogs, and cows. And then just given geography and other things in life, ended up taking a small animal position and actually started learning dentistry from my amazing mentor, who's still a general practitioner, who I've gotten to work with recently now in my new gig. And I was like, okay, the more I learned, the more I wanted to learn, the more I learned, the more I was like, this is pretty cool. And then, yeah, about a year after graduating, I went to my first veterinary dental forum and sort of quote-unquote drank the Kool-Aid, as they say, and I was like, this is what I want to do. And then I toyed with the idea for probably about 3 years in general practice, because I really did like general practice. I liked, you know, being part of, you know, being a family veterinarian, being part of, you know, having those connections and that kind of thing. And then, you know, finally took the plunge and picked up from Ontario, moved to Wisconsin, and was so fortunate to be accepted into their amazing dentistry oral surgery residency program. Finished that a year and a half ago, was working for a short period of time in a large referral hospital, and then just recently decided to start doing mobile. So kind of reconnect with the general practices that I enjoyed working in before my residency. So I'm taking it on the road now.
That is so cool. And you get to spend every single day doing the thing that you love, working with the practices and clients that you love. So let's launch into today's skill set case, which is one that comes from your own experience we were talking about before. But you said that there was a 6-year-old Labrador that you had seen coming from a different veterinarian, and they had been told something different about this dog's canine. So how about you tell us a little bit more about the presentation of this case?
Yeah, exactly. So Max was like a very bubbly, happy black lab. I was seen for the first time at about, like I said, I think it was about 6. I'd been at out in practice for about a year or so. And I don't know, I wish I could give credit, I don't know where I learned this tip, but along the way I learned, you know, it's important to verbalize your exam findings, because even when owners are watching you, which I know is very different now with COVID times, they often don't really appreciate everything you're doing when you're doing it. And so I was just talking through my physical exam, and, you know, the mouth is sort of generally where we start. And so I had just said, oh, okay, so we've got a little bit of dental calculus here, and his canine is purple. Oh, wait, both of his upper canines are purple. And it's really hard for me to stop and pause. I'm a talker, so I learned to do that as well. And when I kind of paused after mentioning the purple canine, the owner kind of jumped in and said, oh yeah, it's been like that. You know, the one's been like that for about 4 years and the other one about a year. And our other vet had said, you know, just to monitor for any clinical signs. And so I said, oh, okay. And in my head, I'm going, ah, don't monitor, it's dead. But I just sort of said to the owner, oh, okay, so like what kind of clinical signs are we looking for? And they kind of mentioned, facial swelling, pawing at the face, maybe some sneezing, if they don't want to eat or something like that. And I was like, oh, okay. And so you haven't seen anything like that over the last couple of years? And she went, well, I mean, he does sort of rub his face sometimes, but like we think that's allergies. And I was like, okay, fair. That really makes sense. Like, I mean, it's ragweed season or something like that, I think I said. And we know labs can have allergies for sure. But I do agree because that root of the canine is very close to the nasal passage. So sometimes, we can see those signs. And I said, I also just wanted to mention that, we have this newer research or literature. That was a bit of a fib. It wasn't brand new, but that's okay. To say that actually these discolored teeth, whether they're purple or pink or beige, 92.2, which you don't have to remember, so 93% are actually non-vital, which is pretty crazy. I was like, oh wow. And so we got to kind of like have this moment of like, wow, like amazing what we know now that we didn't know then. And so I said, while I think it's valid to, watch for those clinical signs, my worry is that if we wait until we see those signs, we may have a much bigger problem than if we go looking, if we go and take an X-ray and find out. And the owner was like, oh, okay. So, and then we kind of started talking down the line of, oh, like, well, what would the options be?
And before we jump to options then, so let's go back and talk about the actual clinical exam and how would we do that in, say it was the COVID time now. So now you have this dog, breaking this down. So how would you talk your client through that same exam over the phone?
So tricky. So, I mean, the good thing is with like something like a purple canine, the owners have probably noticed it, but that doesn't necessarily mean they have. And so I guess, I take a ton of pictures. So if that is something, and I know there's like so much demand on everyone in the team in on the team, but I find visual is so helpful. So like in that setting, I showed the owner, or the owner had already seen it, or in another case where there's like asymmetrical calculus, like I would show the owner. That's a big one I like to share with owners. So I mean, if it's possible, and I know it's hard to get everything done, but even taking pictures, or if it's present and it's there and you think the dog will allow it at home, sometimes I'll just say like, hey, like this is what I noticed. Have you seen it? And if they have, great, then off we go talking about it. But if they haven't seen it, just say like, hey, I know it's hard with, how things are with COVID, but when you get home, if you want to have a peek, and just sort of see if you're seeing what I'm seeing, I guess is maybe one approach I would try. Again, if you've got like a wiggly patient or it's hard to get, if you can get images, I use my phone a lot, but using your phone and even if you just say, hey, like, it's crazy day, but what I'll do is try to email it to you the end of the day or tomorrow so that they can actually see it. Because I do think them being able to see it and recognize it, because a lot of owners don't see what's going on in their dog's mouth. And when they truly see it for themselves, I think that makes a big difference.
I'm noticing that myself being in just practice for 6 months, and I'm trying to think, okay, how do I describe this, like the calculus that I'm seeing on their teeth and the redness in their gums, and maybe there's some recession or bleeding, or I like how you like with doggy breath and how you describe it as disease breath. That is something I think I'm going to change when I'm talking to clients about it, because normally I'm like, oh, there's a pretty bad odor, but then I don't go into too much depth about it. But if I call it disease breath, I think that'll change a lot of the understanding in the client's mind. So I like also the picture idea, that pictures or videos, again, if they can see it better, I think they'll understand your options better and maybe understand the cost of what it all will be in the in down the line. So that's really, really helpful. And then the other point before we go on to the options for this case was, so they had come to you from seeing another vet who had told them something a little bit different. And how you approach that whole scenario, it tells the client not only who you are as a character, but also how you treat your colleagues. So what was the language that you used when talking about this other veterinarian and what their options were and why you disagreed with it?
Right. Yeah. Thank you for bringing me back there, because it's so important. And I think, you know, we can all, you know, resonate with the fact that sometimes it feels like it's us against clients, and really we want to be working together to give the best medicine to their pets. And it sometimes really feels turbulent between us and pet owners. And I think that is, you know, something we have to all work on. And so I think it's really important, even when you disagree with a recommendation, is that, you know, you don't want to put down a fellow colleague. Because I think we've talked about this, is, you know, when I'm the new grad and the vet that they've been seeing has been practicing since I was born, it's like you feel like you need to validate what you're saying, and like, I know what I'm talking about. And I think it's very tricky to navigate that, of like, I am giving you the correct information without, you know, putting down the other person. So, I mean, I think the way that I approached it with this specific case was like, you know, it's pretty amazing what we've learned even in the last 2-3 years, let alone 10 years. In veterinary medicine, but dentistry in general, like, dentistry is our youngest college, and it is. It's one of the youngest colleges of, you know, and I'll say, you know, veterinary surgeons have been around way longer than we have. And so it's all really new, and it's a lot of information. And so I just sort of bring it back to, you know, what was known 4 years ago when this was foreseen versus what is known now. I self-proclaim myself as a dentistry nerd, and I tell them, you know, I spend a lot of time focusing on this because it's my passion, and sort of just let them know that, you know, I was pretty amazed, because I'd always, you know, and I'll even say, like, I had, you know, previously thought, you know, we just watch for clinical signs. And for me, I feel like that's validating, because no owner ever wants to feel or hear that they did something wrong. And they certainly don't want to know that they were given, you know, quote unquote, bad advice. It's not bad advice. It's just the advice that was available at that time. So I think I just said, you know, this new literature, you know, actually pulled together all these cases, and we found out that in actual fact, the vast majority were actually non-vital. And then sometimes I'll get into it, depends on if the owner's interested, but, you know, and we only saw changes in, you know, half of these cases or something like that. So we've learned the importance of, you know, trusting this piece of information. So like the discolored tooth alone is enough for us to say, okay, this isn't right. And we just didn't know that previously.
Mm-hmm. So it's not so much that they got bad advice. It's that previous vet did make okay advice for the information that they had available to them. And that it's just like the beauty of veterinary medicine is that we are always growing, always changing, always trying to do better. And so, going to a second opinion, like, even for myself, if a client is like, hey, can I get a second opinion? I'm like, yeah, sure, please do. Because then it's an opportunity for me to learn. I actually have a case that I'm doing that with right now. And it, truthfully, it was stumping about 3 or 4 of us in the practice. So we're hoping to all learn from this scenario. But again, veterinary medicine, especially as a new grad, can feel like dog eat dog, because you're like, everybody else knows more than I do. Their opinion must be right because I'm new. But the truth of the fact is, yes, you're new, but you have the new information. So everybody has someone to learn from. We do have some new stuff to provide. And the reality is, like, yeah, we're colleagues. We're all there to work and learn from each other. And if we are just telling our clients, oh, that person did it wrong, all we're doing is creating a rift down our profession, which doesn't strengthen it at all. So I think
100%,
like, yes, for new grads to really think about the language that they're using when they are talking about work that their colleagues have done is really important, because it builds your own character. And then you also think, what if one of my colleagues had caught one of my mistakes? Like, how would I want them to talk about me? So thinking about those things and thinking through them, I think it's really important. So back to our 6-year-old Labrador then, who you've gone through the clinical exam, the owner's on board and understanding that, oh, maybe there's something new that can be done here. So what were the options that you talked through with this owner, and how did you describe them to them?
Yeah, so great question, because I do really like talking about root canal treatments, because a lot of people, there's a bit of a misconception, and this just happened to me yesterday of a discolored tooth. A vet had caught it. It had been discolored for about a year, and she was like, "So it's probably too far gone to do a root canal." And I was like, "No way, Jose. Like, we're all about root canals, and every patient is different. So whether this tooth has been discolored for a couple months or a couple years, there's no way to know whether it's a root canal candidate until we take an X-ray. And even if there is, and we use the term abscess because I find that's easy to talk to owners. I prefer to talk with colleagues about it could be an abscess, a granuloma, or a cyst because we don't know without histopath. Again, we're not going to bog owners down with that. But you know, I was talking to this DVM just yesterday, and I was like, no, a year is fine. I mean, as far as time sensitive things go, that would be like a vital pulp therapy, which we won't get into. But as far as root canal treatment, if there's a non-vital tooth, so if it's been fractured for a long time, it's been discolored for a long time, I always tell owners root canal is an option until the X-ray proves otherwise. And I think it's important to at least offer that. I mean, I've been amazed with the people, and I'm sure you know you can share this sentiment, and I think we all can on anything, not just dentistry, of you know, recommending referral or, you know, whatever, and you think there's no way they're going to go for it, and then they do, and then the people that you think that you will won't. So I always, anytime there's a non-vital tooth, I was always in general practice being like, root canal treatment is an option. And if they're like, you're crazy, I'm like, you know what? Totally, I get it. It's not for everyone, but like, I just want you to know the option's there, because these owners actually were like, well, it's funny how often I hear this is like, well, I don't want to know because then we're going to have to take it out. And it's sort of like, well, I get where you're coming from. You don't want the tooth to come out, but like, you know, we don't want to be ignoring. And I never, you know, I just say, I totally get not wanting to know because you don't want to take out, which is why root canal treatment is going to be great for Max, because this is a way that we can treat the problem. There won't be any further pain, but he gets to keep that tooth. And so they kind of helped me with discussing options. So I just sort of, when I describe the difference between extraction and root canal, I always say if we've got a non-vital tooth, we have to get rid of that necrotic dead pulp tissue. And there's two ways to do it, and both are great options because they're going to treat the problem. The biggest thing is deciding what's best for your pet and for your lifestyle. So I always compare directly. So a root canal treatment, even though it sounds backwards, and I used to think this is crazy, how is it less invasive? You're going in the tooth. But it is less invasive because we're not cutting into gum tissue or bone. We're going through the fracture and we're going to remove that pulp, and then the tooth gets to stay. Versus an extraction, we're removing the entire tooth, which consequently removes that pulp. So both are accomplishing what absolutely needs to be done in non-vital teeth. Benefit of the root canal, less invasive, which means faster recovery. So a day of soft food, as long as there's nothing else we need to do, back they go. Extraction, on the other hand, as we all know, because we need to make an incision, we do need to remove bone, we need to cut into the gum tissue. It is going to be more invasive the time of. And then generally we say soft food, no, you know, tug, toys for about 10 to 14 days. So definitely, you know, more upfront. The benefit to extraction is that once that tooth is out and things have healed, so I always mention, you know, we've got to watch things for the healing period, then we quote unquote can forget about it, right? So the tooth is gone. All good. Don't forget about the mouth, but you can forget about that tooth because it's gone. Versus with root canal treatment, while success rate is 95%, it's not 100. So we need to check on that. And much like deciding if it can have a root canal, we need X-rays. So I always say the recommendation is in 6 months we X-ray the tooth, and then every 12 months thereafter. And I would say my overall recommendation is ideally every patient would be having a COHAT or a comprehensive oral health assessment and treatment annually. So if that's something that we're going to do for Max, then really it's just that recheck in 6 months that's an added anesthetic or heavy sedation. And sort of that's how I kind of break it down that way.
So that is, like, that's a lot of information for clients to take in. And
yes.
So how do you break this stuff down? Because, like, for Max, you're like, okay, so maybe we can do a root canal. Maybe we won't be able to. We'll have to do radiographs. But how do you, like, how are you double checking that the clients are hearing what you're saying and understanding what you're saying in these conversations?
Yeah, so that's hard. And like I mentioned, I'm bad at it because I just like jabbered on for however long it was about this. But I have tried to learn that like allowing like pauses and not just like a couple seconds. But I think that's part of something that we all do. And I know I did it even more when I first started because you feel like, oh my God, if I'm being quiet, I need, they're not believing me. And so then I have to say more. So oftentimes I'll just say, you know, try and take breaks or be like, does that all make sense? Or what, which is a yes, no question, which we try and get away from. So I'll say like, what questions do you have about these two treatment options? And sometimes they'll say none and maybe they're lying. Or other times, you know, normally when we avoid those yes, no questions and do something more open-ended, they'll at least say something. It does help. And this is hard because you're not going to see your patients, which is the hard, or your clients rather, right now is just like you get, sometimes they'll get the glossed over look. And while I thought this was crazy when I learned this in Art of Enter Medicine in school, is just like stating the obvious of just saying like, you know, hey, Mrs. Smith, you kind of look like you're a bit overwhelmed and I know that this is a lot to take in. And they're like, yeah, like I'm never going to remember this and my husband's going to ask when I get home. And so I've always been like, okay, you know what, why don't what we do is I'll send you this handout that kind of breaks it down. You can review. And then why don't we chat, you know, at a later date. Now you have to have the handout. What I've started doing or had started doing is once I was like writing up discharges, I would just make a Word document and I would cut and paste it so that, you know, you put a lot of work in the first time you're talking about something like this, but then subsequently you kind of got your verbiage to go with. Mm-hmm. So that has been helpful, but I agree. It can be challenging. And so I think when you can't see your client's facial expressions, normally, I guess, kind of a pause between each statement just to see if they have a question sometimes. So, you know, they can get a word in edgewise.
That is super, super hard. And I've been experiencing that in these last 6 months. I realize I'm just like talking, word vomit's happening. And then I'm like, whoa, how I look at the on our phones, there's like a timer of how long we've been on that call. And so there have been times where I'm like, oh my gosh, I've literally just been talking at the client for like 5 to 7 minutes straight. And I have to stop and be like, okay, that was a lot of information. What questions do you have? And that has been like, I've been training myself and working on that, getting better, still have room to work on that, but getting better. Because so often, like as the new grad, you're like, you're trying to remember the information yourself before you go into it. And so you just end up word vomiting. But remembering that the client doesn't have to know every single little detail of what's going on. They just need a rundown and an overview because chances are they're not going to remember half of what you've just told them anyway. So you don't have to go into so, so much detail. But I like how you're talking about the handouts, which I don't know, because right now I use a lot of veterinary partner handouts. But do you have any other sources for like mass handouts for basic dental concepts?
Yeah, so I'm currently trying to make some. So kind of put together handouts. There's also a veterinary dentist in my area who has, it's Dr. Fraser Hale, and he has, it's like toothvet.ca, I think. And so I've used some of his handouts. Some of them are older, but I did notice that he's just updated some of them recently. And then, yeah, I'm working with the Snout School and Whisper Cloud to try and get some of those handouts available on my website, hopefully soon to be active. Because it is, I mean, I think that's been a big focus now for me is to have those that are easily accessible that you can kind of just grab and go or link or email, that kind of thing, just because you're right. I mean, people are absorbing, you know, maybe a quarter at best of what you're saying, either, you know, not in the exam room now, but over the phone. And so having something that they can kind of go back to. And I do, I always say, like, if they're like, I don't have any questions, I'm like, okay, like, I know it's a lot of information and I'm sure you'll have questions afterwards and I'm always going to be here to answer them. I'm going to give you this handout. Hopefully most of the answers are in there, but if they're not, like, please reach out. Or, you know, I'll touch base with you, you know, in a couple of weeks. Obviously we then have to do that reminder. So you have to, you know, like, what is reasonable for you to do. But yeah, I mean, I very much just, like you say, acknowledge, okay, that was a lot of information. And, you know, when it's happening real time, sometimes you can't think of the questions that you have. So just, you know, making it very apparent that, like, it's not a problem that they don't have questions, because it's a lot to still absorb.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like we've covered the kind of like the big topics when it comes to discussing dentistry with clients, especially with this case of Max. So can you bring it home for us and tell us what was the outcome for Mr. Max? Because I think we're all kind of curious.
Oh, yeah. So interesting outcome. So, I mean, I was fortunate at that time. My mentor was my dentistry mentor. I have a lot of mentors, was actually willing to travel and came to my clinic. And once we got Max under anesthesia, we realized that while both teeth were discolored and we knew would be non-vital, we confirmed that on x-rays. And unfortunately, the one that had been non-vital for quite a few years had started to have inflammatory resorption. And so the root was resorbed enough that he wasn't a good candidate for root canal treatment, or at least conventional. We would have had to do a surgical root canal, which is totally an option. But however, when we spoke to the owners about that, they were, you know, less inclined to move ahead with that. So unfortunately, one tooth had to be extracted, but the other tooth received a root canal treatment. And they, you know, Max and owners were quite pleased, and they did see less of the sneezing and rubbing the muzzle. There was still that still lingered, and we ended up working that up, and it ended up being some environmental allergies at the same time. So it was kind of both contributing to it, but it was definitely a great case to see, you know, come to fruition and see that, like, yeah, we really don't know for sure whether we could, you know, quote unquote, save that tooth until we got in there radiographically.
That's a really cool outcome, and I was super excited to hear the end of it, and I think a lot of veterinary students and new grads were as well. But the whole concept of taking this from start to finish, of dealing with advice that a client received from a different vet, and how you walk the client through the change of the new information that's available, and how we go about approaching cases like this. I know I've learned a ton just from this little conversation, and I know that a good number of vet students and new grads probably have as well. So I know you have a ton more information and a ton more lessons to give us, and you have an Instagram, but where else can people learn from you or come find you if they have questions?
Yeah, I mean, I love the Instagram community. I've connected with so many people, yourself included. I'm so grateful for that. So yeah, so my Instagram is toothy.thompson. I am not the most technologically savvy, so I'm learning a lot, but trying to get more information out there. So I try and do at least a case a week up there. You know, I'm happy to, you know, take comments. I do my best to get back to people if they have general questions. Obviously, case specific is a bit tricky, but if there's just general questions, and often I'm looking to see, you know, what you guys are wanting to learn. You know, I was a general practitioner for 4 years, but it does seem like it's been a long time. So I want to share what I found valuable. So that's probably the best way. And then, yeah, I guess a bit of a shameless plug, but my website should be live in the next month or so. And I'm going to try and get more sort of handouts and stuff that, you know, are tangible that you can help, you know, give to clients and follow up with the recommendations that you're making.
Awesome. So I will do my best to, when that website goes live, to get that link added to the show notes. But otherwise, you can find Amy's Instagram there as well. And again, like, if you guys have any questions or any just questions about dentistry, questions about transitioning in your life and jobs. Like, she's an awesome human being to reach out to. And just from this conversation, you know, she just loves to chat. She loves to share what she's learned. And she's so bright and bubbly about it. So don't feel afraid to go and ask her or just go say hi. So with that, then I'll say, Amy, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing all of this new information. It was so much fun.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun. I, you know, like you say, I love talking teeth, and you know, there's a lot to take in, and I don't envy. I mean, being a general practitioner is hard stuff. It's hard to keep on top of everything. So I very much value doing this and sharing and being able to kind of help in some tiny little way.
Thank you so much again. And so for you guys that are looking to find more about the podcast, you can find that on the website at thatvetlifepodcast.com, as well on Instagram and Facebook at thatvetlifepodcast. But otherwise, until next week, guys, see ya.